Hey everyone, welcome to the Making Waves podcast. This podcast by AAPI's for Civic Empowerment Education Fund is where our volunteers chat about current AAPI community orgs and activists across California. My name is Emmeline and I volunteer with AAPI Force EF because our fight as Asian Americans is still ongoing and it's important to keep advocating for all folks in our pan-Asian community. I phone banked with them and I'm continually impressed by the awareness work that they do, so I'm grateful to be in community with such strong voices in our generation. Thanks for supporting us, and I hope you enjoy this upcoming episode.
Hey y'all, my name's Kevin.
Hi y'all, I'm Kristen.
Welcome to Making Waves, an AAPI's for Civic Empowerment Education Fund volunteer podcast.
Hello, Kristen and Kevin.
Hey, Roz. Hey, Kristen. Good afternoon to everyone.
All right, real talk. How are we doing? How are we doing in these unprecedented times?
The word unprecedented, I've heard that word an unprecedented number of times in the past 2 years. It's kind of absurd. I am okay right now. My ears are kind of stuffed, and I'm in a new city, which is weird, especially in these unprecedented times, as you mentioned, Roz, because how am I supposed to meet people? I don't know. Should I be meeting people? I don't know. Mm-hmm. What about you, Kevin?
I am like a few weeks into going back into indoor activity right now.
Whoa.
And that's been very interesting. And I feel like I'm following some scary news that we're about to hit another surge.
Yes.
It just keeps happening. So
yes,
trying to go out and do some karaoke, do some singing with friends before
it closes again.
And you know, I'm still trying to get used to like folks not wearing masks.
Oh gosh,
like,
yeah.
Around. That's like it's an interesting time to like try and understand what should be the social norms that we're following.
Yeah, I think it's really unnecessary when people are like, oh, you don't have to wear a mask anymore, you know? And it's like, that's to you. That's to you, maybe. And then to like both of your points, I keep seeing this meme that's like, I'm so tired of living in unprecedented times. Can we please just return to precedented, non-historic times? Yeah, so I wanted to open with that because, you know, we're still living through this pandemic. It's been years. And there's lots of new surges. There's variants. I wanted to kick off this episode by just centering that we're really struggling with that. And today's topic actually hits really close to home for me. We're going to be talking today about Filipino nurses in the pandemic. There's just some really startling statistics about how the Filipino nurses in particular are affected in this time. And we're going to get into why that is. And we got to interview some really wonderful and fantastic community members. We have active nurses, and we're going to hear stories today, not only about the particular effect that the pandemic had on Filipino nurses, but also uplifting these nurses' stories, because they're not just statistics. They are humans. They are mothers, daughters, they are fathers, they're someone's nephew, you know? So that's the highlight of this episode. We're really going to go into, yes, why the Filipino community was particularly affected in the healthcare field, but also listening to true stories of folks on the front lines and celebrating them as people. There is a very common like Filipino assumption, right, that there's a lot of Filipino nurses. I'm not the only one that's heard this just because I'm Filipino, but I wanted to ask you, Kristen and Kevin, what percentage of the nurse workforce do you think is Filipino? I know there's lots of Filipino nurses, but like, what do you think the actual percentage is?
In the United States, right?
Yes, in the United States.
My first reaction is like, it's got to be a high percentage. And then I'm like, oh, but I have like a biased, I have a skewed view. I'll put my finger in the air at 10%.
I'm going to go much lower. I'm going to go like 4%.
I think that's on the dot. I think it's,
whoa.
Yeah.
Kevin, are you cheating? Did you Google this?
I did not Google it.
It's 3 to 4%. So small percentage of the nurse workforce. However, I'm not sure if you all had heard, but like during these years in the pandemic, there were lots of news bits, news articles, and interviews about how 30%, that's like one third of the healthcare professionals that died of COVID for Filipino. And they're only like 3 or 4% of the workforce. So that was really startling. We wanted to share that again. We wanted to share that, but also highlight the folks who are really doing the work in on the front lines and highlight them as people. And so we got to interview a couple of folks. We have Justin, registered nurse and also a restaurant owner in historic Filipino town, Los Angeles.
My name is Justin Ferranda, chef owner at High Fly Kitchen. I'm a registered nurse. I've been a registered nurse for about 10 years now.
Zenny, who's also a nurse.
My name is Zenny Triunfo-Cortez. I have been a registered nurse for 42 years.
Aubrey, she's the daughter of a local nurse.
My name is Aubrey. Aubrey Joy is my first name, and 37 single MC.
So first, we'll go to Justin, registered nurse and also a restaurant owner in historic Filipino town, Los Angeles. So we'll hear about his story.
I used to be a professional b-boy, breaker. That was like my first creative outlet and kind of like where I learned how to express myself and pretty much where I cut my teeth in anything creative or anything professional or anything, you know, work related. I was always kind of like creative with the food or just like not a picky eater, but I was like pretty particular with like how I ate stuff. And so, and then as I got older, I started like, all right, like, let's try, you know, cooking this, let's try cooking that. Just like trying out how to make it. I mean, where my family really got me was like, yo, okay, cool. I get it. You want a break. Nurses only have to work 3 days a week to be full time. So you could still break, like, you know, you could still like, you know, compete and all that, you know, on your days off. And I was like, that sounds pretty chill. So that's how they got me. I was practicing for about 5 years. I became a charge nurse pretty quickly. There wasn't really much else to do, like nowhere else to grow, kind of, unless I wanted to like transfer to like another department or go back to school. But you know, I was missing being creative at that point.
I mean, I think as I was starting to listen to his intro, I was like, my first reaction was definitely like, this man is multi-talented. Also, because there was like in my past life, I really wanted to be able to be a B-girl. Like I would like go to some of those breaking competitions and I would watch all the B-boys and B-girls. And I was like, I aspire to this. I can do a basic freeze and that's it. So he comes in, he's like, yeah, I'm almost a professional level B-boy, but also here is me like finding this connection to my community through food and through healthcare and through all these different connections. And for me, something that came to mind is just broadly as I've grown up, just trying to figure out ways that I feel like I connect to my community and my heritage. And I think like I've talked about with Kevin before, is it like through food? Is it through language? Is it through pop culture? I think it's just very cool that in a lot of ways, Justin feels like he had found a lot of ways to connect to his community and his heritage in that way. Roz, you gave a great summary there. And I also recall hearing him talk in the interview a bit about he felt like nursing was something he was more, I don't know if ambivalent is the right word, but more like on the fence about as he was starting off his education there. And I'm curious how his relationship with the healthcare profession and with nursing evolved as the pandemic became a thing. And like, I know he was a certified nurse, a registered nurse, and I'm just curious, it sounds like, if he has a different relationship with nursing now than he did, you know, a few years ago.
So he decreased his hours originally. And then once the pandemic hit, he was like, I can't just sit in my butt. And also I can't do this and like be a nurse and then go to the restaurant where I can contaminate my whole community. So it was also a conscious choice to protect like the residents of historic Filipino town.
As soon as I was able to like train up my staff, I left the restaurant. So it was probably about 2 or 3 months after we closed, after everything closed down, where I was like, all right, like I'm going to bounce. I'm going to go into nursing. Like I'm going to take on more shifts at the hospital. Cause like, I couldn't just like sit on my couch, dude. And like, just like watch it. Cause I was like, man, like I have this knowledge of like nursing knowledge. I know how to do the nursing thing. So I should probably do that.
He increased his own hospital hours from what he was originally working, but also there is a staffing crisis. So there is even more hours to work. He think he brings up like their 12-hour shifts. So now in the pandemic, there's really just this like daunting pressure to move everything precisely.
Yeah, it was weird because having to like learn again. And so coming back during COVID, I was like, what the heck, dude? Because like, you know, like PPE, like you got to gown up all the time, masks and, you know, and stuff like that. It's scary, dude, because if you forget something, you know, you slip up something, like that's it, bro. You know, like you could get it and then you can like, you know, you can affect your family.
You have to make sure you're gowned up. You have to remember to wear a mask. If you miss anything, you are putting yourself at risk, your family at risk. And then if you like walk in and then you forget something, you have to walk out, take everything off, do it correctly and walk back in again. And how that's really daunting to do for 12 hours.
This precision on like how you're buttoning up or like how you're putting your gloves. And there's also the emotional burden of knowing you're like potentially exposing yourself and all of these things. There's just an uptick in all of those burdens compared to pre-pandemic, which must have been really tough to navigate.
I think Justin kind of centers himself as a person who is proud to be from historic Filipino town, is really passionate about making that restaurant a place for folks to remember where it is on the map, like just to even know that there is a historic Filipino town. So he talks a little bit about returning to nursing. And I ask him straight up, like, you know, you are bred of this community. So what is community?
I mean, community is, it's vital. It's like a living, breathing, like organism that people have to like be involved with and contribute to. Growing up here, it was never really very like visible. Historic Filipino town, just like you don't know where it starts or where it ends. It's not as, you know, built out as like Chinatown, Little Tokyo, etc. You know, and yeah, hopefully recognize where we're strong and where we're weak, and that we're stronger together. Folks who are involved with the neighborhood who are real estate, and then folks involved with the neighborhood who are like healthcare and arts and culture and stuff like that. Like, we all need to like work symbiotically.
I think it was really great and fun to interview Justin. I did know him before interviewing him. So it was great to uplift him. His restaurant, Historic Filipino Town Kitchen or Hi-Fi Kitchen, is in Los Angeles. So if folks want to support him, again, as a frontliner, but also as a small business owner in Los Angeles, you can find his restaurant there. So next, we have Zenny, who's from NNU, or the National Nurses United. It is a nurses union. And she, in this interview, is really sharing why. Why is it one third of the deaths are Filipino? What are the factors that bring Filipino nurses and health professionals to be so impacted in this way?
One reason why that happening is because a lot of the Filipinos work in critical care areas and acute care areas where most of the sicker COVID patients are placed. And so with that, you know, we are more exposed to the virus. And then with our mentality that we need to stay because we are short staff and our patients need us, then we have longer work hours. And so we have more exposure than most people. Most of us have hypertension or diabetes. And so we are more at risk because of our comorbidities.
And she also brings in some like really specific cultural aspects to why this is. And then Kristen and Kevin, I'm gonna have you attempt to say these words that she says in the interview.
I do see them.
Okay. You want to try to say them?
Pakiksama.
Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness. Pakakesama?
There are several I's, and in the Filipino alphabet, the I makes the E sound, so it's ki. So, pakikisama.
You know, trait of pakikisama and putting our safety secondary to the safety of the others around us, it's just because of, I would say, instinct and compassion for the patients that you tend to forget about your own safety. And, you know, unfortunately, it leads to serious illnesses and then even death.
Kristen and Kevin, I have a history lesson for you.
I'm excited.
Let's go.
There is a lot of Filipino nurses. There's a lot of Filipinos in the United States and also just like California in general, the Philippines was essentially a colony of the United States. And they wanted to civilize Filipinos who they thought were kind of like savage and whatever. They wanted to civilize Filipinos. And so they taught them about healthcare. They put them in healthcare. And they also established like American nursing schools and actively recruited Filipino women to be nurses. And then we'll start seeing in the 60s, this large wave of Filipino nurses who are coming into the United States. And this is actually because of like feminism, like people who are stepping away from the nurses profession. So we'll see like a large wave of Filipino nurses and a lot of them being women who are coming into the medical field in the 60s. And the other aspect is if they're hired from the Philippines, they get to get paid less. They wanted to rely on Filipino nurses as a workforce so that they could also underpay them. And then in 1965, there's also the 1965 Immigration Act. And this gives preference to migrants who are coming in that already have special skills. So that's, again, more push and pull factors as to like why Filipino nurses are even here. So she brings in Pakikisama. And then there's the other one that you all can also try to say. This one is utang na loob.
Utang na loob.
Mm-hmm.
Utang na loob.
Mm-hmm. Utang na loob is basically, loob is outer. So I don't know how this like translates like actually, but utang na loob is essentially like, I am indebted to you.
Mm.
Basically saying that a lot of Filipino nurses who are sponsored by the hospital, who are coming here on work visas, they're really thinking about how their situation isn't that bad, you know, compared to other people who can't even get to the United States, right? Like the hospital sponsored them. They have working visas. So I'm indebted. I'm indebted to this hospital. I'm indebted to this, you know, opportunity to even be working. I'm not going to speak up. I'm not going to, you know, push back, even though myself and my community members and my coworkers are literally dying. Other stuff that she brings in that's really important. She brings in how just in general, there was two really big crises that were happening. The first thing was the staffing crisis.
More than 57% of the registered nurses reported that staffing in their workplaces had gotten much worse. And so then we knew that here in California, we're not isolated. The problem is throughout the country.
Even before the pandemic, there was problems with not having enough nurses, right? There was already a shortage. So the pandemic just made that so much worse because there are so many people who need treatment.
And then the other thing that really was very devastating is the lack of PPE when the pandemic started. Management was stockpiling and rationing the PPE. They would be better off keeping them in stock than protecting their coworkers. But for us, we wanted to protect ourselves so that we can safely take care of our patients. But for them, it's just another line item in the budget that they need to preserve, you know, the PPE so that they can have it throughout this pandemic.
And then you also find out that there are folks who could not get vaccinated. There are religious reasons and like health reasons why people don't get vaccinated. But what the hospital was doing was firing people who would not get the vaccination. So that also worsened the staffing crisis. The other thing is the real slap in the face there that Zenny brings up saying, like, I think that's wrong, is they kept that eventually there was guidance from the CDC that if you are positive with no symptoms, you should still go to work. So what they're doing in this time where there's already not enough nurses is they're firing nurses who are perfectly capable of doing their job just for not getting vaccinated, and also allowing nurses who test positive to treat patients. Traveling nurses. You'll see hospitals at this time hiring travel nurses who, you know, give up. They'll travel all the way over to help the hospital. And then, you know, when the ratios are a little bit more stabilized, they cancel their contracts. Mm-hmm.
To some extent, like my initial reactions, though, is like, you know, we are in a pandemic and it's a moment in time when being a healthcare professional, you are putting yourself, especially if you're in a critical care unit, for instance, like you're putting yourself pre-vaccinated in times, especially to like at a high risk, and perhaps like the family you live with also at a high risk, right? And so what I'm curious on is, like, if you're a hospital and you're facing this staffing crisis because you need to recognize that your nurses are really putting themselves on the line to go into work, like, what do you do? Like, what did they do to help the nurses out in that time? Because I think, like, I can totally understand why, if faced with the pandemic and the hazards you have to put yourself at risk for, that maybe I wouldn't want to go into work, right? What are the hospitals doing to make this easier, if at all, for the nurses who have to come into work and who choose to come into work and put themselves on the line like that?
The other pieces that I think that are really, like, I think, like, compound all the things that Zenny's talking about are just all those elements around what are the actual hospitals that we see sort of these staffing issues at, right? And how are they predisposed already to have staffing issues because of where they are, right? Are they specifically in, like, the inner city? Are they more often to be like public hospitals rather than like the private research ones that have more prestige, and sort of like already adding on to these facts that, like, because of that sort of discrimination of like where they were educated, where are these nurses getting placed? That add on to all of these actual pieces, these pieces we already touched on around PPE and sort of being forced into working these specific hours. Like, this isn't new, right? What other pandemics have we gone through, and how have Filipino nurses been asked to already fill in before, right? This isn't something that's like a new phenomenon. And so how is it something that we continue to do to, like, fail this community of folks that has such a focus on trying to really serve the community around them and try to provide care for people when we've seen this pattern play out in the past already?
I think both of you brought questions that I kind of have answers to. Which hospitals, right? So Zenny brings up, because it's National Nurses United, they are actually in conversations with other folks across the United States. They're even in conversation with folks like outside of the United States. She brings into the interview, like, we already knew that this was a thing, you know, just on the horizon before things were locked down. And it's really like across the board. There's PPE shortages. There's people dying. And I think there's also probably something to point as to, like, actual locations and what communities those people serve. I mean, the thing about Zenny's interview is that it really shows that the nurses are doing everything.
It's not just within the confines of the hospital. It's way beyond that. We're in the streets, we're in the courts, we're everywhere. Just so we could protect our patients, we could protect ourselves, our communities, and of course our families when we go home.
She's like, we are in the hospital, outside of the hospitals, on the streets, doing pickets, doing National Days of Action. We are holding Zoom sessions to, like, debrief and make space for our nurses. Like, we wish the hospitals were doing things to address this. The thing that's really powerful about Zenny's story and what she's bringing into this space is that it's really the nurses who are working. That obviously comes with a lot of tiresome and burnout, right? Activism and burnout. So yeah, I just wanted to highlight her as just like this amazing person and leader who has also a self-care routine for this time.
But it's a challenge, and I get the strength from knowing that these nurses are behind me. And also my family is very supportive with what I do. I am very invigorated to know that we are making a difference. And of course, our families too, and our communities. Just knowing that makes you keep going and going. I have a cohesive group, and, you know, a small group that I would send a text thread almost every day. And then we have monthly membership meetings. One thing good about the Zoom meetings, our attendance have grown because, you know, they log on, they're in the comforts of their home. And so it kind of helped us bounce our feelings, our thoughts, our fears. You know, it helped us put it out there. And so we supported each other that way.
I can do this because of the nurses around me. I can do this because I know that, you know, the people who I work with, they have my back.
I think what strikes me is that, honestly, it's like, yeah, it's like just deeply inspiring and amazing work that these nurses are doing on all fronts in the hospital and out of the hospital. And the only thing I can say is I wish that they were getting proper PPE. And like, I wish that all of the burden wasn't on their shoulders only.
With the amount of money that's in like our healthcare system, there is too much wealth in our system, in our society, for us to have to like take these wins. There's so much more that can happen. We need to celebrate our wins, but we also cannot accept that this is what's expected or normal of people during unprecedented times.
So far, we've talked to a couple of different folks, right? We talked about different stories highlighting unique individuals who make up the people on the front lines. We've talked about why it is that Filipinos are disproportionately affected. So it is my joy that I get to share with you all the next person that we interviewed. Her name is Aubrey. She is actually the daughter of a local hero in my hometown.
Mama Amy, which is funny because that's my mom. And a lot of people call my mom Mama Amy, or even with a Filipino accent, Mama Ami. So she was a true mentor, parent, mom, coworker, friend at work. Wow, this is going to get me teared up. But last Saturday was her death anniversary. So it's kind of like a flashback of what happened that time. But there's a lot of things to highlight with this story about my mom. And as a nurse, honestly taught anyone what she knew about nursing and how to be a good nurse. You know, you do your best to help them go home to their families, you know, and that's the kind of nurse that I've known my mom to be and that shared to me from her coworkers.
There's a Filipino youth organization at Cal State Fullerton called Bayanihan Collective. And one of our student leaders found out the story about Amy, or how people call her Mama Amy or Mama Ami. And it was really the initiative of our youth activists that were like, we want to be able to do something. We want to do mutual aid. We want to reach out to the family. So the folks at BK or Bayanihan Collective and other Filipino activists came together to meet Aubrey. And we essentially co-planned this wonderful celebration, not only for her mother, but for her coworkers who also had to suffer the loss of their kind of like ate or older sister in Tagalog.
Such a mom at the hospital. And she was at this hospital for about 28 and a half years. So when she became an RN, that was the only hospital she worked at until her death. So she was pretty well known, which I didn't really know about this stuff until later. And one of the things that I realized that she was so well known and popular there was after my mom passed, my brother, sister, and I visited the hospital. We went to the HR, but on our way there, I happened to turn to my right, and it was like this little hallway, and these two ladies were like looking at their phone. And when I saw their phone, it was like a huge picture of my mom. And I looked at them like, oh my God, that's my mom, you know? And I guess that they were just kind of like heartbroken over it and just talking about her. And a lot of little pieces like that made me realize, like, holy moly, like, my mom is huge. And I never knew that, like, because she was so humble, you know.
Bayanihan Collective, Filipino Migrant Center in Long Beach, some local representatives, and then a new youth grassroots organization in West Covina called Change West Covina. And we all banded together to pull off this event to celebrate Mama Amy and support Aubrey, who is our community member.
Roz, I'm just curious, on the day of, like, who were some of the folks in attendance? How did you all get the word out? Like, what was the audience, and what was just the atmosphere of this like celebration of life?
So most of it was Aubrey's family. And I think when you're in a time of mourning, pulling off a huge celebration of life is not something that you're in the mental space for. As community partners, having conversations with Aubrey and her family about like, what do you need? What do you need from us? It meant something to build with a community member, right? To reach out and sit with them and have meetings and talk about how we're going to pull this off together.
My mom, I think that's what we also get from my mom. My mom was so social, super social person. She loves gathering. She loves people. She loves singing. She loves dancing. She loves music, just like my dad. And that celebration of life that we held at our home church. So that is actually our home parish, which is St. Elizabeth in Roland Heights. And they were kind enough for us to use their newly renovated parish hall. You know, your group was kind enough to, you know, put in the financials to rent that place. And a lot of time and energy, of course, planning it. And so appreciative of that, because that was a time for us to gather and, like you said, just celebrate my mom's life, because that's what she would want. And that's what we want as a family. Is not, it's super tragic and sad. But also there should be some space to celebrate my mom's life in a sense where it's not so dark, you know?
The other part about mourning in this particular scenario was that her family was traveling in a pandemic. So not only are we mourning someone who is so, so beloved, you're also worrying about traveling in a pandemic. So again, the part where we got to play in anything with like planning the itinerary, or like we had some of the youth activists from different places like host the event so that Aubrey didn't have to, and perform so that, you know, there would be entertainment for her family.
When it came to that night, everyone was wearing the t-shirts, we were wearing white, a lot of white flowers. Roz did a poem, we had people singing, my cousin danced hula, we had a slideshow running in the background of a lot of photos of my mom, and people speaking, and it was so special, like so, so special.
She would have wanted us to do these things. So that's what it was, celebrating this like really wonderful person. And it was people coming up to remember her, to share their memories of her. And there was tears and there was laughing. It was really lively. I think the perfect description of it was a celebration of life.
That was along the lines of my other question is like, as you all, I mean, you mentioned it could have looked like throwing money and donations, but there was also this whole piece on building like community with this member of the community, this hero. I'm curious what it was like to like build trust with Aubrey and her family, because this is like an intensely vulnerable moment as well for them as they're mourning, right? And there is something powerful about the community coming together to help plan this celebration of life, but there's also an element of like it's a vulnerable moment, right?
I'm going to bring back what Zenny brought into the room of Pakikisama, right? Like, it's natural for us to want to reach out and to help our community. And the other thing to note at this time is that she was already getting reached out to by news networks. But what we were trying to do then, and I think what we, the three of us, are trying to do with this podcast is make sure that we're not just highlighting stories to martyr people. Like, we're not just highlighting stories to paint people as victims and talk about how tragic it is. We reached out to her because we wanted to make sure that the way that we wanted to remember her in the city of West Covina was correct. It wasn't just she was this hero. It was lots of things. It was she was an ate, she was a mom, she was an aunt, she was a mentor. What she would have wanted to was to uplift how this is affecting her coworkers and the hard work that they're doing and celebrating them and their hard work as frontliners too.
When you think about all the members, the youth folks that you were organizing with, was that also the same for them? That like they felt instantly connected to this story, to the folks that were like doing this work, like healthcare workers? Was that something that like also like required some easing into, or was it just automatically something that like all the folks that you were working with all just felt like they were already part of that community as well?
I think that's it. I think that they did feel a part of that community already. I can speak for the folks at Bai Nihon Collective, those like youth activists, when I was bringing in that history lesson, right? They love that. They at BK, those youth are really studying what Filipino history is and how it applies to now. But not only just like knowing for history's sake, right? They want to know it to apply that knowledge to create change. We can talk about labor export policy. We can talk about how we got here and America colonizing the Philippines. But what are we going to do about it? So when this story came up, it really was like actually the initiative of the youth. It wasn't even like me saying like, oh, we should do this. It was like an actual youth activist in BK who was like, we should do this. We should work on this. And then for Filipino Migrant Center, I think just because their work, I mean, even in the name, right? Filipino Migrant Center, like their work just primarily is centered around the issues that working class Filipinos face. It was really easy for them to want to throw down and to help organize and support the family and do this kind of mutual aid. And it was easy for us to care because being grassroots, like we were based in West Covina. Like, we all love the city and we love the people in it.
So I think the only thing that's like, that's been like interesting for me is like this concept of like, because almost of like these community values of like almost everyone wants to do this kind of stuff. It was almost a surprise for Aubrey how much of a, like a hero and a mentor and a friend that her mother was like viewed as within the communities after her mother's death, right? These were things that like weren't even known to her that much.
Strangers are out there available to help and support, you know, and my mom's story is so disheartening at the same time. But it also, like you said, Roz, it's also a time for us to uplift these stories because these are real-time heroes. You know, they risk their lives and they do their best and what they can with whatever role they have or whatever purpose they were sent here for. And my mom completely, you know, fulfilled the purpose of her being either a mom or a mentor or, you know, some sort of just good friend, best friend, great sister, everything, all of the above.
And so in closing, I think really what we covered today was the basic issue as to why it was that Filipino nurses were being affected by the pandemic in this disproportionate way. But what we aim to do and what I think we succeeded in doing as well was highlighting the strength of that community and the different ways in different areas of California, how those community members came together to address this issue. We celebrate our wins and the beauty of this community and the movement to protect our communities, but we're also walking away from this episode knowing that we have to play a very active role in fighting the system that isn't serving our people right now. The change that still needs to happen, and I believe the change that will come. So thank you. I will see you all next time.
Thanks, Roz. Thanks, Kevin. Shout out to Ray.
Shout out to Ray.
Bye, y'all. Have a good rest of your days.
Well, that's our show. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and people close to you. And be sure to subscribe or follow the show on wherever you get your podcasts.
And this podcast was produced by Roslyn Silva and Raymond Liu. Original music by Shin Yen. You can find him on all streaming platforms. Cover artwork by Cynthia Yuan Chen. Shout out to the AEPI4 staff team of Shania, Imani, Ashley, Timmy, and Jen. And our volunteer teammate, Cynthia.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Kevin. Thanks for dropping in.
We'll be back in a month for our next episode.